they have any issues, questions, class-wise that you want to bring up? Okay. So we're getting into some weird stuff. Today may be the peak of the weirdness. So last time we defined a new type of vector multiplication, and this one is called the cross product, denoted by the little x between two vectors. It is not commutative if you're a mathematician. That means A cross B is not the same as B cross A. They have the same magnitude, but they're in opposite directions. Okay. The projectors are possessed. I think maybe given the way in which it started, I will leave this one up here. So generally speaking, a general rule, is that the way to think about the cross product is you take the two vectors and you put them tail to tail in a plane. You will have problems where the problem is set up so that they don't look like that. So to mentally get it right, you want to move them so they're tail to tail, because when I give you this right-hand rule and you talk about the AD sine theta, you're referring to this opening angle between them. And if you have them oriented incorrectly or something, then that's not really the right opening angle. So if you orient them this way, you will have an angle here which is the smallest, and then the plane forms the two vectors. You use a right-hand rule, which is you think about curling your fingers in the plane that contains the two vectors. You want to curl them in the direction of the smallest angle opening, not going around this way, but going that way. You put your fingers in that plane along the first vector. You curl them toward the second vector, and your thumb will be oriented in the direction of the right-hand product. And if you're using the left hand, you've got it backwards. Okay? You're certainly going to be using this in rotational motion. It turns out that when you have a charged particle moving in a magnetic field, if you have the charged particle moving this way and the magnetic field oriented that way, it moves sideways. So it turns out that you have to use the cross product for everything in magnetism too. So you will be using it a lot next semester. So all I'm really saying there is you're going to see this again, so just get it right now. Make sure you learn to use it. So what I'd like to do actually would be, if you fire up your clickers, let's... let's do one of these things. So you should be able to connect right now. Just press a 1. One of you brought a clicker. All right. Now we're getting a few. Just keep on joining. So what I'd like to do is to practice the right-hand rule and cross product a little bit. Here's the first one. I have two vectors, A and B. Here are the letters that I want you to use to answer. Let me see how many are up. Okay, so for this one, A is right, B is left, C is up, D is down, E is in the paper, F is out of the paper, the board, and G is 0. Okay, so figure out which one you think it is. Go for it.
just doing this one.
Everybody count down. Okay, so lots of people are saying three.
Good.
Fingers long A, going into the board, which you know because these are the feathers of the arrow going into the board. Into the board, curl in direction of B, you're going to the left, which is B, so that's good. Okay, why don't we do this one? Why don't we just take a vote? Think about it for a moment. Yeah, I'm asking you to evaluate A cross B in all of these. Okay, so I'd like to know the direction of A cross B here. Those who think it's A. B. C. D. E. F. And G. Okay, so we have the ins and outs winning. In this case, note the orientation of them. They're not tail to tail. So you have to move A down so that it's right here. Okay, A cross B is then out. So F. All right, what about the third one? How many of you think it's A? B. D, E, F, G. All right. They are collinear. Sine theta is zero. That's one way to think about it. Or the other way to think about it, which I actually prefer you to think about because I prefer you to consider what is the component of one vector perpendicular to the other. And the reason I prefer for you to sort of think of it that way is because that'll sort of help you visualize and have better intuition about physics aspects of this. In this case, there is no perpendicular component of B relative to A or A relative to B. So there's nothing to project out cross product of zero. Alright, so good. I see that most of you are getting that. So we have sort of a solid body here of some sort, and it is able to rotate about this axis. It's in the plane of the board. Here is your force that acts on it. What is the direction of the force? There are a couple of ways to think about it. One is this force does not pass through the axis, the line of the force, the line along which it's acting, doesn't pass through the axis. So that means there is a component of this force that's going to cause rotation. You can think of the lever arm through which this force acts as the line that runs from this axis to that line of action, which is perpendicular to that line of action. So a way to think about it would be, here's the line of action. And you might think of this as R. And if you do that, then you can take this F and put it here, and R cross F gives you something into the board. So that tells you. But also, this type of thinking may be necessary to actually calculate the torque. You have to figure out what this perpendicular lever arm is. Another way to do it would be to visualize it where you think of that as your R. And when F goes over here, again, you put your fingers along, you take fingers along R, and F, and you'll be into the board. So that piece doesn't really change. In terms of calculating it, remember when you do the cross product, you're literally, if this is over here, this is the sign, let's say this one. Effectively, the cross product will project out the perpendicular piece of this R. So that's what gives you this. The sine theta is 1 when you have them perpendicular one another, and you have an actual sine theta when you have them at this weird angle. And what you're going to find is when you're doing problems that involve torque calculations like this, when you look at the problem, it will be easier, usually, based on the information you're given in the problem, to use one way or the other to actually calculate it. It's usually sort of obvious, but they're equivalent. So I'm not going to belabor that at this moment, because we'll do calculations later that will make it a bit more obvious, I think. Any questions? There's another way to think about this. Oh, tell me I didn't do that. There's another way to think about this, which is, if I were to just ask you what is the direction of the torque, remember torque is equal to I alpha, so the direction of the torque is going to be along alpha. Alpha in this case, if you imagine that it's at rest and you're pushing on a force here and you're trying to get it to rotate, you're trying to get it to rotate like that. So that's the alpha you're getting. You're basically generating an omega such that this goes around like that. And from your right-hand rule, if you curl your fingers around the axis in the direction of the rotation, you get your thumb along the direction of omega and alpha in this case. So that's another way to sort of think about it. Okay, so we talked about other things last time. Remember, we're doing this game where we look at linear physics that we've done, and we look at rotational analogs. So we have had a linear thing that we called momentum, p, actually, which is a vector quantity, which is mass times velocity. And we saw earlier that you can write, or you do write, Newton's second law in terms of the change in the momentum with respect to time. And if you pull the m out and you assume that the mass is not changing, then this is the same as ma. So you're very used to that, and what I'd like to do is to look at the angular analog to that. So we call something called the angular momentum, usually given the symbol L. And that's equal to the angular mass that we've been using, the moment of inertia, times the angular velocity, omega. This is a vector equation. In the same way that we have F equals ma here, we can look at the rate of change of the angular momentum. And that is equal to the angular force instead of the linear force. The L is equal to I omega here. If we assume I does not change with time, which is a little simplification here, then this is equal to I times alpha. That would be the equivalent. Torque is equal to I alpha. So that is what we use as the force sum for an angular problem, if you want. And another thing that is really important is that angular momentum is conserved. Remember that momentum conservation works under all circumstances, even sometimes energy conservation, which is always true, may not always be useful. You have the same thing in this case. Angular momentum is always conserved. But sort of like linear momentum, there's always sort of the lawyer gives us the caveat, right? If you have an isolated system. And this, the same was true for momentum conservation. In this case, angular momentum is conserved if I don't have something from outside putting a force on it. This is a vector quantity, so it may sound a little bit strange, but in some three-dimensional system, you can have angular momentum about one axis, and then the two other axes that are orthogonal to it. So that's literally three equations. Okay. Very often in angular problems, you really only have to worry about one axis. So you don't usually have to worry so much about the vector aspect of it. So if I am rotating, for example, if I am rotating in a plane here, and I have rotation in that plane, friction-free. But I don't rotate this way or that way because there are external forces like the friction of the floor that prevents me from rotating in one of those axes. Okay, so in this problem, if we worry about this kind of rotation, then we have angular momentum is conserved around an axis this way, but not any of the transverse axes, nothing horizontal, because of the external force. So we're going to come back to that, but I'd like to do a couple of example problems so that it starts to hopefully make a bit more sense. Let us imagine that we have a thin rod, which is of length L, and it has an axis about one end about which it rotates. And if you look at the moment of inertia for a thin rod about an axis around its end, N, which is in some table you might find somewhere, you get this formula that the momentum of inertia is 1/3 times the mass of the rod times L squared. And I believe you, in a workshop problem, even derived that. So we have such a rod, and now I know the way I have it drawn, it looks like it's a rod here at Earth, and it will have gravity acting on it. And so forget gravity in this problem. Let's assume there's nothing else in space, okay? We have this rod, and it is acted on by two forces. And I show them here. One is a 2 N force that acts straight down, perpendicular to the rod at a distance 1/2 L. And the other is this force, 6 N, which acts at an angle of 30 degrees right at the end of the rod. So then the problem gets raised, thin rod fell, free rotate about axis on one end. I give you the mass of 3 kilograms, the length 2 meters, and I want you to find the vector angular acceleration for the rod at this exact moment. Okay?
Day.
I left my lecture notes in my office, and I'm going to wing it, but if I have to, I may run and go get them. And then this tablet PC sometimes just decides to arbitrarily blank out pages, which it just did. So, sorry about that. I left my glasses, too, so this is going to be fun class. Holy shit. Just wait till you're my age. I'm looking, I'm going, okay, I can't see a thing. No, I want to delete something. So I'm going to take this.
Thank you. about that. I was going to do this whole thing quickly because I had it all laid out. All right, so let's solve this problem. We have this mass, we have the forces, we have the rod. Okay, so I'm gonna call this orange. I'm gonna call this F1 and this one F2 for fun. And in this
particular problem, nothing's translated, so we don't really have to worry about linear aspects. It's just a rotational problem.
So we want to use the fact that the sum of the torques is equal to I times alpha.
And you may say, yo, we're doing vectors now, and you didn't write a vector equation. And that's sort of true. But in this case, it's equivalent to the one-dimensional thing in the sense that I have something that will rotate me this way or that way, and I don't actually really need to use the vector piece so long as I have a torque that goes one force that would try to make it rotate one way have one sign, and a torque that would try to make it rotate the other way have the other sign. So sort of equivalent to the one-dimensional thing. So let's just use that. And
so if we think about that, I is this 1/3 ml squared. Alpha, and we're after alpha, we're given M, we're given L. So now we need to look at the sum of the torques, and I'm going to define, you have to decide what you mean by positive or negative in this case. So I'm going to assume that something that rotates this way, clockwise around the axis, is positive.
Your book may give you a rule for that. There's no, all that's really important is in this problem, you choose one and you stick with it. So that's going to be what I'm going to say.
So it's good to say so. So I'm going to choose that kind of rotation as positive. And I'll just do something silly like this to just denote that so that I can remember that that's what I've done. And then if you look, this force is going to cause a torque that will cause this sort of rotation. So I'm going to call that positive. And it's acting at right angles to the lever arm. So I'm just going to have 1/2 times L, which is the R, times F, which is the 2 newtons. So the sum of the torques is equal to 1/2 times L times F1. And then I have F2 here, which is going to act to rotate it the other way. So it's going to come in with a minus sign. And it now has a component that actually is parallel to the axis and isn't going to cause a rotation. And it has a component which is perpendicular to the axis. So I'm given this angle, which isn't necessarily particularly transparent or useful from the point of view of our usual right-hand rule, because remember, this A cross B is equal to magnitude of A times magnitude of B times the sine of theta, only works if that theta is the opening angle between those two vectors. So you cannot just look at this and transparently say, oh, theta is 30 degrees and use that formula. Okay? So the way I do it, I mean, you can take this, and you can say, here's my R vector. I can take this vector and move it over here. So there are two ways to do this. One way would be to say, okay, there's my R vector. Let's, you know, pretend it's up here. And now I take the F2 vector, and I put it over here. There are my two vectors, and this is the angle. I didn't draw that very well. I'm I'm given that angle, right? If I just move this vector over here, that's the angle I'm given. By parallel lines, that's this angle. So this is 30 degrees, and this then is 90 plus 30, or 120. So if you want to use A cross B is equal to the magnitude of A times the magnitude of B times the sine of the angle you use is this 120. These 30 are wrong. Okay? But if you think your way through it and orient it and you keep your angle straight, that'll work. So in this case, R2 cross F2 is equal to the magnitude of R2 times the magnitude of F2 times the sine of 120. So you can think your way through it that way. I usually think about it a different way, which is equivalent, but I find it more intuitive. And that is, here's my force. The piece of the force that is relevant for rotation is only the component of this force that's along that line. So it's that piece. And that piece is going to be F2 times the cosine of 30. And once I know that, I multiply that by R, and that's my torque. Is it okay with that? So I can imagine that I have my R2, here's my force F2, and what I want to do is project out that piece, and that is F2 times the cosine of 30. And now the torque here is equal to, let me not do the vector part of it, let me just, the torque is equal to the length R2 times F2 cosine of 30. So you can sort of see the kind of trouble you get into if you blindly use that stupid formula and you just see a theta and you pop it in. Because the truth is, the way this geometry is given, it actually has the cosine of that angle. Right? So it's only if you think through it that you can pull out the sine. So you have to be really careful with that. Alright, so all that goes to say, and if you take your calculator out, what you'll find is that the sine of 120 is exactly the same as the cosine of 30. So they're equivalent. Alright, so we're working on the second torque, and it's going to be the cosine of 30 times F2 times the full L. And it has a minus sign because it's rotating the other way. So minus L times F2 cosine 30. And we're good. Okay, so now you can plug everything in terms of numbers, which I didn't want to take the time to calculate, but I didn't bring my notes. So you'll end up with something, and when you look at it, you're going to find that the alpha you calculate, I mean, this is not I alpha, so you calculate, the alpha you look at here is actually going to be negative, because this term is larger than that term. So that tells you that it rotates counterclockwise for you, okay? And so you'll get a number, right? You'll get some number, and it'll be negative, but there it's only a number. The negative sign tells you sort of how the thing rotates. And now to answer the question, which is what is alpha, alpha being the vector, is you would say, okay, if it's rotating that way, then alpha has got to be out of the paper. So it would be the number, and then you give some sort of unit vector saying out of the paper. You could say alpha is such that it causes it to rotate counterclockwise as you look at it. Okay? and I'll clean that up and put the numbers in, but I don't want to waste time reading. Any questions?
Let's do a different one. Suppose that I have
two disks that basically rotate about the same axis freely. This one happens to be rotating, they're identical disks, each of mass m, radius r, and this one rotates with omega. This one is not rotating. In this problem now, this disk is allowed to drop onto the other disk. So it drops down, and when it hits the other disk, it sticks, like the super glue between the disks. So it doesn't slide at all. And then the question is, what is the final omega for the system? How would you do this? One thing we could consider is to use energy conservation. I know the kinetic energy of that disk is 1/2 m omega, 1/2 m omega squared. I know the mass of the two disk system, right? So if you had energy conservation, kinetic energy conservation, then you could write 1/2 times m omega squared, which is the kinetic energy that you start with, is equal to 1/2 times 2m times the final omega squared. Set those equal to each other. You have m, you can get the new omega. Is there a problem with this? Yeah, this is equivalent to being an inelastic collision, right? Because when that thing hits, you have massive friction that basically accelerates it instantaneously up to the other outlet. In reality, of course, it would slide some, and then it's a complicated sum, or a more complicated problem. All right, so that doesn't work, but just like in the linear case, what we did when we ran into inelastic collisions was we realized, okay, the kinetic energy thing doesn't work, it's not useful for us, but momentum conservation works. So in this case, let's think about it in terms of angular momentum conservation. So, if we think of the moment of inertia of the lower disk spinning, it has some I, which happens to be a 1/2 mr squared, and it has its initial omega. Then the second disk falls on it, so you now have a new object, basically. It has twice the mass, and it has a different omega. So you're going to have a different I and a different omega. But it's still two disks, so it's really the same as a disk, except it has twice the thickness. It turns out the moment of inertia is the same, because the basic distribution of mass from the axis hasn't changed. So this moment of inertia becomes, you use the same formula, except now the mass is double. We didn't change the radius. So it's 1/2 times this 2m times r squared, and now you have a new omega. And if you look, everything cancels out with that factor of 2. So you end up having omega for the final system just be half the size of the other. Which is, again, very similar to a linear problem. If I had two masses of mass m and this was moving at some velocity v and hit this one and stuck, this whole thing would be moving at half v. Alright? Any questions on Any of this? Pretend we're on the Food but one time we had this, when I did this, I rotated one way, and then the other time I rotated the other way. Alright, so let's just think our way through one situation. If it's rotating like this, in this plane, what's the direction of the angular momentum vector? Does it have angular momentum? It's got angular momentum, right? It's got mass, it's got a distribution, it's got a moment of inertia, and it's got omega. So I have an angular momentum vector that is in the direction of omega. L is equal to I omega. It's rotating this way in this plane. L is a vector going like that. So it has angular momentum. Angular momentum is conserved if there is no external torque. I'm on a system where there's no external torque. When I was standing, okay, I can control. It's actually not easy to control, but I can control. I can make it do things. Here, I've now isolated in this axis, all right? If it is spinning this way, angular momentum is conserved. I can try to force it, like so. This is still spinning. It still has the same magnitude of angular momentum. Angular momentum is a vector. I have just taken angular momentum this way, and I did that. But angular momentum along this vector has to be conserved. So if it is rotating this way, and I turn it like that, the whole system has to rotate like this in order to preserve the vector angular momentum going straight up. If it's rotating this way, and I do this, the angular momentum vector is down, so I have just reduced the angular momentum along this axis is down, so I now have to rotate this way to conserve angular momentum. Okay? So let's see if we've got our directions right. Rotating like this. Like this, it's like that, which means it's like this, so I have L is down, okay? So if I turn this thing, I should rotate, the whole system needs to rotate so that I have a downward L, right? And the more I rotate it, the faster I have to rotate to make up for it. And when I bring it back to where it was, I stop. Because I restore that same angular momentum, so I don't need the rest of the rotate. So it's now going up. I don't have it spun up very fast, so this will not be a dramatic effect. Oh, screwed up. It's going like that, so now when I turn, I have to spin in such a way to keep it up. Let me see if I can fix this, because I want to use it. Okay with that? Any questions? That's why you spin a football. You get it spinning, it's in the air, it has an angular momentum. That is completely stable as an isolated system in terms of its orientation and its magnitude unless you have a torque. You'll have a little air friction, it may slow the spin a little bit, but by, you know, if it has a slight angle off, you may get a little bit of a torque and something weird will happen. We'll show you in a moment what kind of thing can happen. But effectively, it's now got a fixed orientation, which is exactly what you want, because you want that thin end going through the air. If it poses sort of a lopsided thing, then it starts to waft around. You have a lot more air friction, and you also can have the thing actually juggle around in the air a little bit. So, okay?
Is equal to I omega. L is equal to I omega. Torque is equal to I alpha, or the derivative of L with respect to time, which is the change, well, the torque is the derivative of L with respect to time. So, imagine if I have a spinning wheel about an axis. And let's suppose that the spin is like that. And let's imagine that I have a force here and a force here. I'll call them normal forces. Let's put them equally to each side of this thing. So this wheel has a mass, so you have an mg, and I support it on both ends. Okay? The two normal forces will equal mg in magnitude, so there's no net force down on this thing. Okay, so there's no torque. So if that's the case, okay, nothing's going to happen. But now let's take the same system and let's remove one of these forces. So now this other normal force now is equal to mg. And let's imagine that I have an axis here. So I have an axis of rotation. So I have an axis that supports the thing at some level, at least keeps it from falling straight down. Okay. But now if you look, this mg is a torque about that axis, right? If this is not spinning, what's going to happen? I'm supporting it where N is. It's free to rotate. I have a force down this way, so it's going to rotate, right? It'll fall. It's going to rotate about that, about this point. And I will have, there's an R out to where the mg is. R cross mg. R cross mg gives me a torque into the board. That gives me an alpha such that this thing starts to rotate like that. All right? I support it in both places, nothing happens. If I let go on the left side for me, I guess your right side, it's going to rotate. Right? So we're right. Okay. The system had no angular momentum.
If this thing is rotating the way that arrow shows, I have an angular momentum that is going out. Okay? What happens now if I have an angular momentum? If I put a torque on the system, we have an equation up there that tells us the torque is equal to the change in the angular momentum with respect to time. I have this wheel, it has a torque on it, and it has an angular momentum. Angular momentum vector is going out. It doesn't matter what I'm doing to it, it doesn't change in magnitude. Okay? So, but it does have to change, and it has to change in the direction of the torque, because that's a vector equation. And the torque defines the change in L. Okay? Are you good with the math? Do you see that? Now, what does it tell you is going to happen? I have R going out, mg going down, that's a torque. R cross mg gives me a torque that goes that way. So what that math tells you is that if I'm holding this thing and it's spinning, and I let go on one side, it doesn't fall, it goes sideways. That's totally counterintuitive. Okay? It rotates around, which is something we call precession, and we'll solve for it in a second, speeds up. So right before it crashes to the ground, the top goes really fast, and then boom, it's all done. Assume it's not slowing down, you know, then L doesn't change magnitude. Okay, so L is straight in this plane. And in this case, we have an R that runs from here out to there. So there's your R. So you have a torque which is into the page, or into the board, right? Because you have R cross F. The N is on axis, so there's no torque there. R is zero for that force. So you have a torque into the board. So what it's telling you is the angular momentum has to change, and the only way it can change, and it has to change such that it becomes, it changes in that, it gives you a component that way. L has to change in that sense, which means this L has to rotate this way. And then what you'll notice is as it rotates, the same thing is always true. This torque always ends up perpendicular. So it just rotates around in a circle like that. When it's in this plane, L is that way, okay? R is like this, F down, the torque is that way. So that's why it just keeps rotating around. A little bit like the centripetal force is always toward the center. It just keeps the thing moving in a circle. Here you have the fixed axis, and you have a torque that changes the angular momentum at all times going around the circle. Now, one of the reasons that I show this, which is probably the single most counterintuitive thing you're going to see all semester, probably because it's just freaking weird, and you got to do something to make this stuff fun. But actually, it is a much deeper reason. I believe that this is the one thing you see this entire semester where your intuition is completely wrong. And the mathematics, using vectors, shows you exactly what will happen. So if you're sitting there wondering why we're doing all this vector crap all the time, and you know some of it seems so simple, the vector mathematics seems like an awfully hard way to skin the cat. This is partly why, right? This is because mathematics is extremely powerful. And I think it's an interesting question to ask, why mathematics is so useful in describing reality. Okay? Your mind has some serious limitations, but this is an example where when you develop the theory and you do the mathematics properly, it actually tells you what's going to happen and it allows you to see things that you would not have been able to see otherwise. And it's really sort of an amazing aspect of this. And you're going to see a bit more of that next semester. But this example shows the power of vectors. Okay, so this phenomenon where this thing rotates, something which we call precession. And there are natural examples. The Earth sort of precesses on its axis as it goes around the sun. If you've ever ridden a bicycle, I mean, when I learned to ride a bike, I was scared to do it until I had reached an age where it was really embarrassing not to ride the bike, right? So I taught myself by going in the backyard, which was a little bit of a grassy hill, and I basically got this little bike, and I would just start running, and then I would hop on it, and then I would just fall. And I would run, and I'd hop on it, and I would just fall. And, of course, you know, Mom would come out and say, "Oh, that's okay," and help me up. No, Mom was at the window laughing while I was tumbling and falling. But eventually, I sort of stayed on it long enough to get going a little faster. And if you've ever done this, you realize that once you get moving, it's actually a lot easier.
it's a lot easier because you now have angular momentum in your wheels. And it actually starts to be hard to change. Okay, they're very stable at that point. So you actually have to apply like serious torque to get the thing to move at that point. And so you learn to do this naturally. You don't have to think about it, but there's a lot of angular momentum in physics that's happening in riding motorcycles or bikes or whatever.
So precession is happening all the time. Okay, so we can calculate the velocity of the precession. If we look from above, at this thing, we have an angular momentum vector, L, that's going to actually change in its direction because we have a torque vector here, and the torque is equal to dL over dt. So in a dt, the L changes in its direction like so. So that means that dL over dt is equal to, we're going to call this angle sorry, I don't have my notes here, so I'm having to just wing this. I believe, so what's going to happen is this thing is going to rotate around like that, and it will have an angular velocity, which we're going to call omega. And this is the angular velocity of the precession. So what we're talking about is the large omega there is the angular velocity of this thing going around its axis. Okay, so that is the big omega. Oops. So we have that mg times R, which is the magnitude of the torque, is equal to dL over dt. And dL over dt is basically going to be the magnitude of L times d big omega over dt. We'll call this this angle that we're going around, I'll call it phi or something. So this would be d phi. And this quantity we call the big omega. So the angular precession speed, the angular velocity of the precession, how fast it goes around, is going to be equal to mgr over the magnitude of L, which is I times omega.
You okay with that? Now, if I didn't screw this up, which is why I like to have the notes there, look at what happens. If I make the mass of the wheel bigger, it rotates faster. So let's see. I'm not going to be able to make the mass bigger, but I can put a bigger torque. I can give it a bigger mg. I hope I can make this work. But what I want to do is I'm just going to barely push on the tip of this thing as it goes around. And when I do, it speeds up. I'm not pushing it. If I push it up a little, it slows down. Okay? The little omega in the bottom is the speed with which this thing is spinning. Okay?
Okay? So let me spin it up fast. It's going nice and fast. And as it's going nice and fast, it has a fairly small angular velocity for the precession. As it slows down, little omega in that expression is getting smaller. So the big omega, which is this rotation, is going to get faster and faster. And you've seen it. When you do the top, right, you have a spinning top, it's going fast, it just rotates sort of slowly, precesses slowly, and then right before it really stops, it starts going really slow, and then, but the precession is going faster and faster. So this is going now faster and faster and faster as this omega slows down.
Questions on that? All right, so now we have rotational motion and we have linear motion down. So let's suppose, God forbid, that we were an engineer and we wanted to actually build something and have it not fall down, right? Well, if you want to have something and have it stable, basically, then we have a situation which a physicist would call static equilibrium. Again, it's really critical that you give simple concepts, funky names, for job security. So in this case, if you want something to not fall down, you say it's in static equilibrium, basically. You say, you know, something's not going to happen to it. So what does it mean in physics, mathematics-wise, that I have something totally stable and not falling down or going anywhere?
So,
I have a ladder against a wall. How do I quantify the fact that it is in static equilibrium?
What would you pull out of your tool chest?
Okay, so it says the opposing forces of the floor and the wall and the mass all cancel out, so there's a crash into the floor or go zipping through the wall. True. And you've done problems like that, effectively, right? That's a Newton's law problem. And if I translate what he said into something as opaque as possible. I probably could be more opaque if you'd like me to be, but we're going to limit it to this. We're going to say that the sum of the linear forces is equal to mass times the acceleration. You know that's true. We don't want it to accelerate. So we set it equal to zero. There is no linear acceleration for this thing, and it's starting out at rest. So that is one condition. There's another issue. Right? It doesn't have to crash through the floor or the wall. It could do this. Right? So if you've actually ever been up on a ladder, that's the one you're actually really worried about. Yeah. So how do you constrain that in an equation? You say, okay, I get my little rubber to stand at the foot of the thing and push in.
And if you're lucky, you don't have a little brother who would pull it out. But, okay? So, but what is he actually doing? He's increasing friction, which does what? It gives you an opposing torque to something that would rotate you like that. So,
in static equilibrium, the sum of the torques is equal to I times alpha. Okay. Now, if I could see, I would know which button to push to flip this page properly. Good guess. Horrible design. It's a Fujitsu tablet PC, and it's really wonderful in a lot of ways. It's just this kind of thing where you flip the screen and put it down. But I don't know what the idiots were thinking. They have it set up so you have to have a very particular orientation to have it properly on the screen. But if you do that, at the bottom of the screen, where as I look at it, there's a series of buttons. Some cause it to scroll, some cause that to happen, okay? And they're all right where your wrist would go down. I don't know what they're thinking. It's like, oh, some idiot designed this thing and then nobody ever used it before they started selling it. Sorry, I'm venting. Thank you. If the torques sum to zero, what you're saying is you have no alpha. You start at rest, therefore it does not rotate around any axis. It's a vector equation. So, if you're going to have something and you want to build it and have it never go anywhere, then all you have to do is satisfy those two silly equations. So no matter what kind of weird structure that you're ever given, if you can satisfy those two equations, you're done. Now note, I think you're sort of used to the linear one. It's going to move this way, that way, or that way. And so you just sum the forces in all those ways. So in this case, you know, you have a normal force up from the floor, one from the side from the wall, mg down. And if somebody is climbing up on the thing, right, you'd also have some M prime G down, some force of the person on the ladder. So those are your forces. And you can say, okay, oh, and then you've probably got a friction force. So you can sum those forces so that they, the sum of them this way is zero, the sum of them that way is zero, and you satisfy the linear aspect to it. But now you've got to set the torques equal to zero. Okay? What axis do you choose? I have no huge axis through this thing, so what do you do? You could choose the center of mass in the system or something like that, but you could also choose here, or there, or here, or there. It doesn't matter. For any axis on this thing, the sum of the torques is zero, because if it wasn't, it'd rotate. Okay? So you have complete freedom in this problem to choose an axis and then calculate the torques and set them equal to zero. So you choose the one that's convenient. And in some cases, you want to choose the one where maybe you don't know the force. For example, I could put the axis right here because I may not know the force of friction, which means it doesn't come into that equation. Of course, I need it for this, but okay. So it's not usually for free. But sometimes, you have freedom to choose the axis. So to do these problems, all you have to do is actually just satisfy this and this. Sometimes the problem is actually picking the force. Anyway, we'll do examples on that next time. So have a great weekend.
Yeah, what should I end this? trying to think of like how we would go about doing like the right hand rule on this and show that it would come to zero. Because if we're talking about it, it would be a rotation.
Yeah, yeah. So what I do is I visualize.